opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
You're listening to an encore presentation of We the People on KCNR.
Another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan, and my trusty co-host Bill has been eaten alive by shingles. So I don't know. Not a big vaccine pusher. But I'll tell you what: if you have had chickenpox, and I don't care if you're not over 50, because apparently it doesn't, the virus doesn't care. I've met so many people under 50 who've had it. But it attacks your nerves. I always thought it was just a rash. Apparently there's more to it than that. And Bill is in week 3+ of this thing, and it is just not going away, actually. Pretty ugly. So there's my shingles commercial. In fairness to all those of you who are like me, who are like shingles mingles, you know, how bad could it be? Yeah, well, pretty bad. So let's see. Today we're gonna talk about climate change. I'm so excited. I love our climate change shows. And I realized we haven't done any environmental, really, like, specifically on environmental issue shows for a while, which is obviously silly and wrong. So this is a layman's look at anthropogenic, got that in quotes, meaning man-made, global warming, with Kurt Stryker. And do we have him on the phone? Oh, we're calling him right now. All right, so we have him on the phone shortly. He's a retired school teacher who taught life, earth, and physical sciences. He's a master's degree and focused his studies on geology and specifically in the study of the ice ages. That'll be handy. He has a keen understanding of how and why climate changes and the environmental science of climate change and global warming. There's so much information that's censored to the general public, and I think we kind of already know that, regarding climate change. And you might be surprised how much the world has been brainwashed. I think if you listen to this show, you won't be surprised at how much the world has been brainwashed, but who knows? Maybe. Maybe not. Anyway, I think that you will learn a lot today, and hopefully the learning starts here pretty quick. What's happening? He's not picking up. That is awesome. So, let's see. I will text him now in real time. Please answer the phone. That's an easy one. And so, anyway, the fun goes on. What else do we have going on? Oh, the lawsuit for Prop 50 in California. So, they remember, we're not suing over, and I say we, using the term loosely, only because I have spoken with Mark Moisher about this, the attorney. So they're suing over the Voting Rights Act and about the racial gerrymandering. So if you have not followed that, I'll put a link on today's page, but really I've got the most information at ShastaGOP.com. And if you go to ShastaGOP.com, the Prop 50 scam page is still up. When you go there, there are a few things that are kind of interesting since we have a few seconds here. The interactive version of the post-Prop 50 maps is up there. I think you'd be, if you have people who live in other places in California, you will see that, honestly, it's just gotten ridiculous. You know, the whole thing has just gotten ridiculous. The districts don't make any sense. And then the second link I have there, I called it interesting third-party site that includes more partisan detail and vote history. So it's davesredistricting.org, and then there's a very long, the rest of the URL is very long. But if you go to that site, it's fascinating. You can just scroll around and you can see the difference in the districts by voting, you know, so how many, you know, independents, Republicans. You don't have to click on it. It isn't a chart or a graph. It's just a list of items, and you can look at them one by one. You can have them all overlaid, and as you move your cursor around the map, those numbers will change, and you'll see some of the districts are just bizarre. I mean, the shape is bizarre. And you're thinking, really? You had to do that to get the right amount of people? Unlikely. So you can go back and forth between the maps we have now that were drawn by an independent commission and then those. So the calculus was that it was unlikely that if they sued over constitutional violations and the many, many things that were wrong with the process, that that would be dismissed by the courts. So they decided to jump in on the Federal Voting Rights Act and take it that route. So you had a Supreme Court decision recently regarding that on the Texas redistricting. So we don't know how all of that is going to play against our, you know, our situation. We just don't know. So, let's see. We're not getting Kurt. So how about, why don't you pull one of my songs from my fun global warming thing, and I'll call him on my phone, since I do not have Bill to, I do not have Bill, my trusty foil, to run my airtime with me here. I could make Alex just talk about nothing. Alex is like, yeah, that won't work.
I can talk about tons of stuff.
Well, there you go. This is your time. Oh, my God.
All right, I'm going to play Bon Jovi, Bad Medicine, while you try and...
Oh, we like that one. That's a fun one.
All right, here we go.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
As a thank you for your outstanding service, Wind River Resort and Casino would like to honor you with our Military Monday promotion. Join us every Monday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. to receive your dining discounts and free slot play. Active or retired military members can present their military ID at the River Club to be entered into this weekly promotion. For more details, download the Wind River app or visit windriver.com. Find your moment at Wind River Resort and Casino.
Planning a wedding? Celebrate the moment with a free dinner for two at Odell Craft Barbecue. With our slow-smoked brisket that melts in your mouth, even Texans say it's some of the best they've ever had. We cater events and weddings of all sizes, from intimate gatherings to receptions of 1,000 guests. We make delicious food and great service, so you can stay present with the people who matter. Odell Craft Barbecue, real wood, real fire, real flavor. Book your free tasting at ReddingBarbecue.com. Again, book your free tasting at ReddingBarbecue.com.
Is your garden ready to wake up from winter? Grange Co-op has everything you need at our Early Start Garden Sale, now through February 22nd. Spring is on the way, and we're celebrating with big savings. Take 40% off garden seeds, 30% off houseplants, and get a buy three, get one free deal on Rogue poultry feed. Whether you're planting new blooms or perfecting your lawn, Grange Co-op has you covered. Swing by Grange Co-op at 55 Lake Boulevard in Redding, or shop online at grangecoop.com to jumpstart your spring garden today.
Yeah, it might. And if it did, that would be super bad. So, he talked about a few things. So I'm gonna give you this article here. So Proposition 50 does exactly what critics warned it would. It has now sidelined California's Independent Redistricting Commission for congressional seats until 2032. And it has substituted a set of partisan maps designed to flip five Republican-held districts into reliable Democratic seats while shoring up Democrats in an equal number of competitive seats. So let's unravel that for people who don't follow this kind of stuff. We have 52 congressional seats in the state of California, and you're looking at nine of them in the current mapping. Nine of them are held by Republicans, which is obviously a very low percentage. So they felt the need to take five out and leave us with four Republican representatives. And people will say, well, other people could run. I mean, that doesn't mean that they can't run. No, it doesn't. But if you happen to kind of glance at the map, there's a green one. There's a green section at the top of the state. That's the easiest one to eyeball. It is now District 2 at the top of the state. So it's Modoc, Siskiyou, Shasta, you know that. But it goes all the way down to Marin County, and we've spoken about that before. So although that's ridiculous, and those people all have nothing in common, and there's no industry commonality, there is no social commonality, there's no tie with farming, it just doesn't make sense that all of that is grouped together. But the interesting thing is all of these seats were drawn for, well, I shouldn't say all is a big word, many of these seats were drawn for specific legislators. So that one was drawn for Jared Huffman, who is currently the congressman in District 2, a Democrat, avowed socialist. He used to be the attorney for the Natural Resource Defense Council, who was part and parcel involved in, the Central Valley water situation. So he hasn't done anything that would benefit the folks in Northern California with all their battles with water, and I'm sure he loves wolves. So all the things that we try to fight, he is busy undermining. So that's great. That is a plus or minus 25-point advantage to Democrats as that seat goes. So someone could run in that seat, but the likelihood of them being able to flip that seat to a Republican seat, basically kind of zero. I realize, you know, things happen, but you would have to get a huge percentage of Democrats to swing over. And I believe in this political climate, there isn't anybody who's that, optimistic, right? So then you look at the next district down, District 1, and you realize, okay, that's terrific. But that seat was cut for Mike McGuire, who is a state senator and president pro tem of the state senate. And okay, so he has a huge advantage there, 11, 12 points. That would be worth jumping in on. The congressman for our area, Doug LaMalfa, is currently running in that district. So let's just say that the courts take a look at this on the 15th, because that's the magic day, and they decide that, there's possibility. How about that? I don't know if it has to be likelihood, but maybe there's a probability that that will go through, right? If, in fact, they think that the maps will be reversed from this new Prop 50 change, they may just say, look, you have to keep the same maps until we sort this out in court. But let's say they lose in court. That means in the next election, 2028, these weird maps would go in. So there's like a lot of stuff in play. This is not a done deal, and there are a lot of weird moving parts where, you know, I asked Mark Moisher in the show we did with him here a couple of weeks ago, and I said, well, so, you know, what are the odds that this will get flipped? He's like, yeah, nobody can really give you that. Nobody knows the odds. So I was like, okay, good to know. So we watch. So that's kind of, you know, the seats, how the seats lay out. And that's happening in other places. So again, people think, well, you know, you can still run in those places. Yeah, but if it's advantaged, I would encourage you to scroll over the map and, you know, on that Dave's redistricting mapping thing. And you'll see that in most cases it's 60, 70, sometimes 80% Democrat. They made sure that it was very, very weighted. light. And when that happens, like, to give you an idea, television in that District 1, the second district from the top of the state, from Oregon, that district just to run television over in the area that is really heavily populated is like, I don't know, $500,000 a week. Who's going to raise that kind of money? You know, that, and good grief, what if somebody was out of town that week, they missed all your ads, you just spent $500,000. So when you look at that, it's that's a powerful problem. And really kind of goes against, you know, so for all the people who voted for it, you might have friends or you might be them, and you're thinking, well, you know, it's to save democracy. Well, we're a representative republic, and I realize there's a democratic element to it. So when we vote, you know, it's a 50-plus-1 situation on our representation to elect people. But this doesn't further democracy. This actually encourages people to stop participating and tells them that voting doesn't matter because now their vote won't matter. So, not great. He goes on to say what makes its passage especially striking is that Californians overwhelmingly like the Independent Commission. According to a Public Policy Institute of California survey taken last month, 72% of voters say that it has been mostly a good thing, that redistricting authority was taken away from the politicians and given to the Citizens Commission back in 2010. That view holds across party lines, across regions, and across demographic groups, even among the very voters who supported Prop 50. In fact, majority of both yes voters, which was 77%, and no voters by 67% agreed that the commission has been a positive reform. Yet Prop 50 didn't just pass, it passed overwhelmingly. So the question is why? The first is execution. So once Governor Gavin Newsom decided to pursue new maps, the Democratic leadership across California aligned instantly. Legislative obstacles were swept aside because they have a two-thirds majority and can make their own rules. Legal challenges were dismissed out of hand by the Democratic stacked state Supreme Court. Yeah, say that fast. Public and private employee unions, as well as significant businesses that either get subsidies from or are regulated by the government. They wrote massive seven-figure checks very quickly. The nearly $300 million cost of staging a special election, that's what it cost all of the counties in the state, all the 58 counties. That was treated as incidental. They kept saying it was a nominal cost. When one party controls every institutional lever and uses it, there appears to be no safeguard capable of slowing or stopping such an effort. So then the second and arguably decisive factor was message framing. And I think we all saw that regardless of which team you were on. Prop 50 was not sold to voters as a technical change to the redistricting process. It was sold as a symbolic blow against Donald. That framing transformed a complex procedural question into a simple yet powerful statement. The mechanics are abstract. Dislike of Donald Trump is visceral. In a state where opposition to Trump has become a political identity, that alone was enough to anchor support. The more the campaign tied the measure to national politics, the less the specifics mattered. Emotion outperformed process, and it almost always does. So I think we all saw that. This had nothing to do with Donald Trump, but people were willing to set aside how it would work, sometimes set aside their own interest. I mean, I have people who are farmers in Northern California who will be hurt by this process and by the representation they will now be getting. And they were willing to do that because it was so vital that we sent a message to Donald Trump. Ridiculous and kind of crazy, but that is where we are these days. So let's see, Alex, we still have to take a break. Is that correct?
Yeah, we can do that if you want. And all right. Kurt, please call.
Kurt lives in Santa Rosa. I'm going to blame Santa Rosa for this. Has anything happened in Santa Rosa? Where has he gone? So if you want to find other shows that were actually really well done that have good content, you can go to We the People Radio. .us and listen free of charge.
All right, here we go, guys. No whining this time. And one, two.
Whew. of the clouds.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
I'm Nathan with the Redding Trail Alliance, and we're here at the Redding Bike Park. We just want to thank the Redding Rancheria for all the help they've given us over the years supporting the many projects we're doing for our community.
Hi, I'm Dan, and this is Donna, and we're with Wings of Angels.
And we'd like to thank the Redding Rancheria for their continued support over the years to our foundation.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Are you looking to take your business to the next level? Don't let staffing issues or HR red tape stop you from growing. The most successful businesses are those that have mastered their HR and staffing needs, and they have done it with O2 Employment Services. Finding qualified help is harder and more expensive than ever. HR regulations are getting more and more complex and confusing. For over 20 years, O2 has been providing the foundation successful businesses need to grow, assisting employers with their HR, payroll, workers' comp, benefits and staffing. Partnering with O2 gives you the expertise you need to manage your business and employees. Outsourcing your HR and staffing is no longer a luxury. It's a necessity for successful businesses, and it is more affordable than you think. Let O2 show you how we can help you reduce your HR complexities, hire the right talent, and get back to growing your business. Call O2 today at 530-223-4674 or visit us online at o2es.com.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Hi, I'm Ted Bambino, president of the Redding Rodeo. We are thrilled to be partners with the Redding Rancheria. They are an integral part to the success of the Redding Rodeo.
Hi, I'm Julie. This is Debbie. We're here at the Shasta Family YMCA.
Hi, and I'm Kristen, the CEO. And on behalf of our team, I'd like to thank the Redding Rancheria for the many years of support for our programs and our projects like the playground.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire.
Yeah, I figured I'd play that because we're kind of in a ring of fire right now.
I told Alex, I go, oh, it's a good thing I'm Irish. We've been chit-chatting about things randomly for centuries. I'm pretty sure that's how we outwitted all of our enemies and stayed safe. We actually either made fun of them, which is tough because I've got nobody to make fun of today. It's very brutal. So we either made fun of them or we talked them to death. Well, there was a lot of drinking, too. There was that.
There was
a tremendous amount of drinking. And I think they were pretty savvy warriors. History, I think, will bear that out. All right. So let's scurry back to Prop 50, because I do want to finish this. It is worth noting how this happened, because, well, I like bite my tongue, but, you know, this kind of thing will happen again. It's not the first time. Not the first time we've made bad choices here, and not the first time other states have made bad choices. So another point here, the funding imbalance reinforced the advantage. The Yes campaign raised over $170 million. So it isn't to say that people didn't donate to the No on Prop 50 campaign. And it wasn't that people didn't try. I would never throw anybody in this effort from top to bottom under the bus. I mean, we had people in Northern California counties who printed trifold brochures and walked them to, I think it was like 3,000 doors they walked in Siskiyou County. People became very, very involved in this. So it wasn't one of those things where everybody just decided they were going to sit down and try to slide uphill and get away without doing anything. So the opposition fundraising never reached the scale required to counter the level of saturation. The Yes side outraised the No side by a crushing 2-to-1 ratio, a difference made more pronounced because almost all of the No on 50 funds were spent very early, much of it before the ballots were mailed out. A decision was clearly made back in Washington that the amount of additional campaign funding funding necessary to try to defeat Prop 50, as much as another $75 to $100 million was not going to work. With finite national resources, they decided, which is reasonable, that their campaign funds would be better used in dozens of competitive House seats elsewhere in the country, many of which were already held by embattled Republican incumbents. Once that strategic call was made, the Yes side had the airwaves largely to itself during the critical voting period when ballots were already in voters' hands. And I'll tell you, I ran into people all the way up until November 4th who were like, well, what is this anyway? For heaven's sakes, everybody got a mail-out ballot. I think most of us disagree with that process, but it still is the process for this point in time. And when people got them, they either didn't look at them, saw that it was one thing, didn't know what it meant, threw them out, decided to wait, find out about it later, and then, boop, clock ticked. Third factor was the official ballot title and summary, which, of course, we always knew was going to be bad, written by Attorney General Rob Bonta. The voter guide described Prop 50 as requiring congressional districts to be drawn, quote, in the same manner, unquote, as state legislative districts by the Citizens Commission, language that suggested continuity and procedural fairness. Meanwhile, that was only a suggestion. For many voters skimming the voter guide, Prop 50 appeared to protect the commission's process rather than override it. Combine that framing with a lack of consistent opposition presence during the final weeks of the voting, and it became clear how many independents and even Republicans likely voted yes because they believed they were defending the very system the measure was intended to replace. California just demonstrated that reform can be popular, respected, and working, and still be erased the moment it becomes inconvenient to those in power. The independent commission didn't fail, it was crushed. And now that the Democrats who rule the state have learned that they can steamroll any safeguard with money, messaging, and muscle, this won't be the last guardrail to fail. So I thought that he laid that out really well. John Fleischman is a Republican political consultant who's successfully passed a dozen ballot measures nationwide, and he writes at sodoesitmatter.com, and I do have that posted on ShastaGOP.com if you'd like to go look, and I encourage you to look at the maps. It's worth it. Especially if you do live in California, you'll be affected by this. And, you know, if you think that they're just going to come back to it later and, you know, they're just going to go back to the way it was supposed to be and all that. Highly unlikely. Just highly unlikely. I don't know. Call me negative, but I don't know. I have my doubts. You know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay. We got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down. We can't hold back. Oh, you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.
I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire.
My name is Aaron Ryan, and the indomitable Bill Cundiff is out sick today. He has been overtaken by shingles. So I will spare you my shingles thing, but you should really look into whether or not if you've had chicken pox and you were like me, mistrustful and suspicious of things like vaccine that they always want you to have. I'm like, just the fact that they want me to have it tells me I don't want to have it most of the time. Yeah, I had to kind of rethink that one on this after watching Bill down the drain for 3+ weeks. So we hope to have him back soon among the living. So let's see. There's something going on in the engineering room. Something's going on with thumbs up that requires
Kurt
thumbs up.
Kurt is on the phone.
Get out. Climate change has returned. My goodness.
It's back with a vengeance.
We were going to have to stalk you and, well, you know, we just played Ring of Fire, so you kind of know what we were thinking.
Well, our church service went long. I don't know why.
that's where you tell God you got to go.
Yeah, I didn't have my phone on, like, loud, so it just went to silent. I always put on silent at church. Anyway,
right.
I'm back.
Right, and then you saw, who is this Aaron Ryan person who keeps calling me repetitively? I'm going to need to file some sort of a restraining order.
That's right.
And then you were like, hey, wait a second. I remember her. Holy crap, what time is it? So, all right. I've been reiterating on the Prop 50 sadness and madness in that order. And just finished. We were getting ready to move on to something else. So glad you've...
Interestingly enough, you know, it's kind of like, I like it when Trump plays chicken and they don't know how to play chicken.
Yeah.
They don't even know they're playing chicken. You know, he throws it out there, then they react. It almost like a conditioned response.
Yeah. I think Pavlov probably, you know.
It's pretty funny. Anyway.
Yeah, he set that
so,
up. I already gave your bio at the very beginning. So all we know about you is you were a teacher and, whoops, sorry about that. Turn my phone. Now I can turn my phone off because now you're not going to call me anymore. you have a background in geology and teaching sciences, and you have a unique perspective on man-made climate change, global warming, and that debate that never happens because we never get a seat at the table.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, one of the things that I like to emphasize, especially when talking to people who don't know much about the topic, but they hear a lot about it. For example, you're talking to your average Joe on the street, and you ask them the random question, you know, how much carbon dioxide is in the atmosphere? And they say, a lot. I say, well, how much percentage? Like, for example, 21% oxygen. And they say, okay, they'll maybe say so. I've seen as high as 60%, and I've seen as low as, like, 5%. Rarely, to the point where it's like, it surprised me when they say, oh, yeah, 0.038% or 400 parts per million, which is trace.
Yeah.
That reduces down to one molecule of carbon dioxide for every, get this, for every 2,500 parts of atmosphere. So 400 parts per million is one molecule for every 2,500. So you have a $2,500 bills floating around. One of those dollar bills is carbon dioxide. And of that little carbon dioxide dollar bill, we contribute 4 pennies to it, 4 cents. So that 4 cents, that 4% of the world's carbon dioxide that we're actually contributing to, and that's actually being generous, it's absurd. It's absurdity upon absurdity. It's thermodynamic nonsense. Secondly, carbon dioxide is a gas. It's a natural occurring gas. It's an important gas. It's a gas of life. All plants need it to live. And photosynthesis has to be what keeps our planet alive. Without photosynthesis, there's no more life. They're producers. So we need plants to live. The healthier the plants, the healthier the planet, the healthier the life is on this planet, let's say. So, carbon dioxide has been as high as 2,500 parts per million, and as low, and we're at the lower scheme now, we're at 400 parts per million. We've had it like 350 to 325, you know, based on Volstock ice core samples. For example, that would be ice cores that formed in Volstock, Antarctica, kind of given the basic reading of how much oxygen and nitrogen and so forth is in the atmosphere at the time. Carbon dioxide being most of the time trace, and giving readings as high as 2,500 parts, that's a lot. That's great. That would be like if you're in a greenhouse in Switzerland, for example. In Switzerland, they're very smart people. They're very productive people. I was there, and I asked about these greenhouses, and they said, yeah, we pump in carbon dioxide in there to get a bigger crop faster with less water, because when you have more carbon dioxide, you become more drought resistant because you don't have to have your stomata open so long that you lose water through transpiration. So anyway, getting back to carbon dioxide, it's a great gas. It's trace. We contribute very little. But carbon dioxide, people don't know this either, it only holds heat while the sun is on it. So if the sun is out, it's hitting carbon dioxide, well, it will create a little heat. It'll hold it for a little while. Once the sun goes down, there's the problem. Problem is, it doesn't hold heat unless the sun is actually beating on it. Now, interestingly enough, if you go to Hawaii, where I used to hang out a lot, I would sleep outside under the stars, you know, look at the palm trees if it wasn't raining and so forth, go outside. I would sleep without a blanket. It was so warm there because water vapor happens to be the world's number one and most effective greenhouse gas because it holds heat all night. How's that one?
So yeah.
It might get a little cooler at night, but not as much because water vapor holds heat all night. So as soon as you, say for example, a solar eclipse goes over Colorado like it did in 2017. Standing outside, it was 80 degrees. This is a report from a friend of mine that was there. 80 degrees, t-shirt weather, solar eclipse goes over in 2017. He said it went from 80 to 65 in seconds. He said within 10 seconds, he's telling his wife, wow, feel that cold. We got shivers. We were thinking about getting jackets on. And so my wife went and got and so forth, right? So he told me this whole story. I said, yeah, because water vapor only holds heat while the sun is on it. You block it with a planet or a moon, let's say, and now we've got 5 minutes max of cold. And then it goes past and it starts warming up again. So the point is this. Carbon dioxide, yay, is a greenhouse gas, but it is very ineffective at doing what greenhouse gases do, holding heat. So it's not even a player. It's trace. We contribute very little of it, and it doesn't even do anything with regards to the greenhouse gas effect of holding heat and moving it. That's what greenhouse gas, like water vapor, holds heat and moves it around. It's thermodynamics. So it is utterly thermodynamic absurdity to believe that carbon dioxide actually is an effective gas that runs the climate. Water vapor, number one greenhouse gas. 95% of the world's greenhouse gas is water vapor. The other would be other gases like carbon dioxide and methane, which, by the way, is 2 parts per million. That's 2 little molecules for every million molecules of our atmosphere. It is thermodynamic absurdity. If you say that cow farts are causing climate change, you need to have your whatever degree you have revoked immediately for utter and complete absurd incompetence in the knowledge of the science that you're supposedly being an expert.
No pun intended on the whole utter thing.
Yes. So anyway, there's a little rendition about carbon dioxide and its importance for life. The more of it, the better. It is a greenhouse gas, but it doesn't act like a greenhouse gas in the sense that it actually holds heat and does anything important with the weather.
Uh-huh.
Water vapor being the number one greenhouse gas. For example, we've had various epochs. We've had the Great Ice Age. We had the Mini Ice Age 1, and then the second Mini Ice Age 2, and then we had the Little Ice Age. We just came out of it, started warming up after 1850. So Greenland was green at one time during the Roman warming period. England grew grapes during the Roman warming period as far north as Scotland. That's climate change. Was it caused by cow farts or human activity? No. Natural cycles. Volcanism, blocking the sun, cooling the earth. Those are the things that really affect things. The sun and its relationship with the water vapor and the atmosphere. The sun is primary, obviously. So when you block the sun with lots of like ash in the atmosphere from volcanoes, sulfur dioxide, etc. There was actually a year, I believe it was 1815, that they said there was a year without a summer. It was so bad, there was no summer for at least 1 year, a little bit into two. What happened? One little volcano popped. It's called Mount Tambora in Indonesia, right near the equator. Blanketed the earth with volcanic ash, blocking the sun. No growing periods. People were dying, famine was increasing, pestilence was everywhere. It was one of the worst times ever. Have your audience look up the year without a summer, Mount Tambora, and they'll see just one little volcano did that. And it was right near the equator, which was really significant for that reason. So when you look at geology, geology ties in very much so to the climate. For example, you have the Cascade Range. Mount St. Helens, May 18th, 1980. It blew its top. That's what got me into geology, by the way, Mount St. Helens. I was fascinated with volcanism and tectonics and so forth, and so that's where I went into geology, and that was the major thing that happened in my lifetime that really got me stimulated in that direction.
That was a huge impact. Kurt, we have to take a really quick break, then we're going to come back.
All righty.
Our guest is Kurt Schrenker, and you are listening to We the People with just Aaron. That's it. No Bill. Bill's homesick. So that's why he's not saying anything. I do not have him, I do not have tape over his mouth. I haven't done anything to him. He's fine. Well, he's sick, but he's fine. You can find everything about the program, including the archives, how to sponsor, all those kinds of good things, at wethepeopleradio.us. Yes, we do have a wealth of music available for shows on this sort of topic. Blind and New Science, what's it from, like the 70s maybe? 80s?
83, I think.
Probably.
Oh. Yeah, still good today. So, all right, Mount St. Helens happens, and you already sort of liked that top.
Well, yeah, what happened was all this ash, as if you remember, made it south. It made it all the way around the Earth, actually. Made it to Maine in less than 3 days, and of course it darkened everything underneath it. So people were really seeing the sun being blocked. There were streetlights going on 24 hours a day underneath the cloud of ash that was blocking. And of course it got cold, too. But the thing was, when you have multiple volcanoes, Lassen, Shasta, you know, St. Helens, Rainier, Baker, you know, all these different ones in the Cascade Range and so forth, all going crazy. Now we've got a blanket of ash. So when volcanism was heavy in the past, and it has been at times, we can know that. We even Lassen is a very active volcano to this day. I'd love to, you know, study that one. I've actually studied quite a bit of Lassen, actually, over the years, because it does reflect a lot like what we see at St. Helens. Mount St. Helena here in Santa Rosa, California, where I'm from, St. Helena was a volcano that was twice as tall, lost 3,000 feet of summit elevation in just a series of a few eruptions about 3,500 years ago, making this whole area basically covered with rock, volcanic debris field that now we're living on top of, and that's why Sonoma County has such great wines. We got the great weather and the great soils, as it were, to give a good wine grape, for example. But anyway, I digress there a tad, but I had a plug-in for Santa Rosa and the wine country. The thing that I was really extremely into at one time was glaciation. I still am. Glaciation. We have Meteora in Greece. We have, of course, glaciers all around the world. But Yosemite Valley was glaciated during the Great Ice Age. And those little areas, that was almost 2 miles of ice in Yosemite Valley. That's
wow.
A lot of ice.
That's
and
a lot
across
of ice.
The fluted plain, you know, all the way across, you know, you got down to Kentucky, into that area, all the way down from Michigan and all those areas, all that was ice during the Great Ice Age. We're seeing with the Great Lakes and all the different scratch zones and scrapings and everything else, we see that, what they call moraines and so forth, remnants of ices or ice age ice that formed these glaciers. So we have times where we have cold and we have warm. We have warming periods and cooling periods. And we have those that recorded in history. The Roman warming period, the medieval warming period, the Renaissance came. It was times were better historically under warming periods and cooling periods. When you had the Great Ice Age, we had people living in caves. We call them Neanderthals. They were human beings living in caves. They believed in life after death. They buried their dead. They did cave paintings, but life was hard. You couldn't grow anything. You had to. All your food came from meat. You know,
yeah.
If you found, you know, vegetables, it was a luck job there. You know, you didn't have farming. It was just wasn't happening all that much. Soon after that, that was a great ice age. After that, we had a warming period and a cooling period, a warming period and a cooling period. And we're just coming out of the last ice age. It's called the Little Ice Age. Through the 1700s, it started warming up after 1850, they say. That's kind of the target date. You know, it's hard to fix it, you know. But the point is that we're on a warming trend. So now we're looking at this little itty-bitty time and saying it's all caused by cars. Wait a minute, what's the car problem? Oh, yeah, carbon dioxide.
Yeah, right.
Carbon dioxide. Oh, yeah, that's good for plants. Give me some data. Give me data points. Show me the proof. No, we're just going to give you assumptions and what we think. We don't even have to give you data points. There hasn't been any real papers, anything really substantial to give human-caused climate change even a leg to stand on any scientific level. But they say, oh, 93% of climate scientists agree. Hogwash. I read the paper. There's a guy named Cook out of Australia. He basically said, it's been like years since I read it, but I'll give you the gist of it. He was saying that what they did is they took about 12,000 articles in a span of 10 years. They didn't read the articles. They just looked at the abstracts. The abstracts give you the kind of the summary of the paper on climate change and ice age, anything to do with warming up the earth. Okay, any papers?
Sure.
97% of them, they say, Obama quote, he just tweeted it one day, 97% of climate scientists agree man-made global warming is real. Boom. And now the whole world bought into it, hook, line, and sinker, because it was unquestioned assumptions that Obama would give us the truth. Well, when you actually read the article, it said nothing of the sort. It was 97% of the third that have 97% of the, because it was basically broken down in thirds. The papers are broken down, and they say basically a third of them say yes, a third of them say no, and a third of them don't know. So of the ones that say climate change, 97% say it's human caused.
97%
say they don't
even know. So
they're not even looking at all the data, and they're ignoring papers that didn't fit the paradigm. So we get guys like Mann, the hockey stick.
Yeah.
We get him to do a paper, and it says, look at that. We have stasis and then a sharp rise in temperature. Hogwash again. He was shown to be a fraud. He ignored data, major data points that showed we have a mini ice age and a little ice age that would have been in that graph, but he took them all out because he wanted to see stasis. So he used what they call data that they got from a different direction. They didn't use the same data points like historical. They used tree rings to get the data. That's really reliable. And then so he was able to get the data he wanted to create the graph he wanted to create the extreme stasis with a sharp rise during the Industrial Revolution. Ah, see, it's all tied up, it's all correlated to climate change here with humans and their Industrial Revolution. So industry bad.
Right.
Stop eating meat because, you know, flatulence from cows are causing climate change with the two molecules per million. Okay, that's another absurdity. They say we've got to do something about these cars. We've got to make them this way. And so they're trying to make them cheaper. They're trying to make them lighter. They're trying to make them economical. And they're trying to do all these things. They're pushing electrical now, of course, with Teslas and different other cars. They're trying to manipulate us. And, you know, for example, this is something crazy. And you can check this out on your own, but the Biden administration did the Green New Deal, basically. It was actually the Green New Deal, just repackaged. They allotted, during Biden time, $8 billion to build car chargers for your average car. Not your Tesla chargers, because they're everywhere, but car chargers in various malls and places. $8 billion was allotted. In the 4 years, they built 8 chargers. 8. That's $1 billion per charger. I wonder where the rest of the money went.
Michigan?
You have to ask the question. You can't spend $8 billion. I mean, I'd love to spend $1 billion on something. I would have the most amazing house ever, right?
Yeah, if you could even spend it. I mean, could you imagine?
Yeah. But, these people were putting money in people's pockets everywhere to where they could.
But there never was a repercussion particularly for that because we just have never, always use the term we loosely, have never been able to get around the corner of this not being a man-made problem and all of that. I mean, it just, can you talk at all about kind of the motivation behind a lot of this? I mean, is that in your wheelhouse?
It's all over the wheelhouse.
Okay.
You know, the science, obviously, I can rock solid rest on the science.
Yeah,
problem, therefore you have a human solution. The human solution is basically socialism. Okay? That's where it's basically going to head.
Yeah, and that's what they're...
Never let a crisis go to waste. We got to create a crisis.
And that way
and
we can...
And that's the one to blame it on us because, you know, we can have the hockey stick tell us, and Obama told us, and there you go. Well, non-scientists giving us science.
But, Kurt, didn't we have... Wasn't it global cooling in the 70s? I seem to remember
Absolutely.
That as a kid. We were all going to freeze to death, right?
Exactly.
And then...
The thing is, we have short memories, and we're really not too bright. we make decisions on assumptions and on emotions, and people are geared that way now. They just trust the science. It's like, wait a second, trust the science. What did they tell us about COVID? Oh, trust the science. Give
me a break. Yeah, that blew up. Yeah, and what science? Because in what class did we ever? I mean, even if all you did was go through high school, you know, science was never. Someone said something, and then it was that way forever. That's it.
Well,
what happened to the whole hypothesis and, you know, all those good things?
Questioning science is science.
That's how that's how we invented things. That's how we solved problems. That's how we figured out the Earth wasn't flat. I mean, really, the whole time. Any idea? Really, what's your thought on why these guys did? Were they just super well connected?
What do you mean?
I mean, you know, these guys that somehow they make some crazy assertion and then I guess we'll have to do it on the backside of the news. But I'm curious how they became so powerful.
Yeah, okay. No worries.
We're chatting about climate change now. We've gone from Prop 50 to climate change like we were supposed to. Yay! And I have a fun song for you about glaciers. It's painful to listen to, but funny nonetheless. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I look at you now, see your temperature rising, while mighty glaciers weep. I look at you now, see your oceans arising, while nations are lost in the deep. I don't know why nobody told you they stole and fooled you.
Welcome to an encore presentation of We the People on KCNR, Shasta, Redding. The current temperature is 45 degrees, light rain, and thank you for listening. Once again, you're listening to KCNR, Shasta, Redding.
K
K243CT Redding.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Redding by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice.
News this hour from Town Hall. I'm Mary Rose. U.S. Secret Service announced Sunday that an armed man was shot and killed after entering the secure border of Mar-a-Lago, President Trump's resort in Palm Beach, Florida. Although Trump often spends his weekends in his resort, he was at the White House during this incident. A new issue is causing frustration for some travelers.
The Department of Homeland Security has suspended the TSA pre-check and global entry airport security programs while there's a partial government shutdown. Both programs are meant to help speed registered travelers through security lines. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem says airports and ports of entry also are suspending courtesy and special privilege escorts. The trade group Airlines for America, which represents major carriers, says it's past time for Congress to get to the table and get a deal done. The partial government shutdown began February 14th after Democrats in the White House couldn't reach a deal on legislation to fund Homeland Security. Donna Warder, Washington.
The SAVE Act, which has passed the House, is now awaiting a Senate vote on a bill that aims to prevent non-citizens from registering to vote. Correspondent Bill Alexander reports senators who will have out recent polling to consider when they take it up as early as next week.
A poll from Rasmussen Reports finds that a majority of likely voters are concerned about non-citizens voting in American elections. 55% say that it's likely that non-citizens vote in American elections, and a Pew Research Center survey found that 83% of Americans support mandatory photo ID for voting.
In a Gallup poll published in late 2024, it found similar results. 84% of Americans support requiring a photo ID in order to vote. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Listen carefully. Silver prices have experienced a historic surge, breaking above the $100 per ounce threshold for the first time, and industry experts predict silver could climb even higher. It's not too late for you to benefit from the surge in silver. Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000 to get our free gold and silver investment guide. Plus, you'll also receive a free copy of economist Ken Rogoff's book, Our Dollar, Your Problem. Debt is rising, currencies are under pressure, and investors are looking for real assets, not paper promises. That's why so many Americans are turning to physical gold and silver with Advantage Gold. Historically, when silver starts moving, it can move fast and aggressively. This isn't about guessing tops or bottoms. It's about understanding risk and positioning before momentum accelerates. Call Advantage Gold now at 800-900-8000 and find out how you can get a tax and penalty-free rollover for a portion of your retirement funds for 2026. Results vary. Consult your financial advisor before investing. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000.
Israeli airstrikes on eastern Lebanon have killed 8 Hezbollah members.
Officials from the terrorist group say 8 of their members died in the strike near a village in eastern Lebanon. Hezbollah also says the Israeli strikes killed 3 local officials as well. Officials from the terrorist group spoke on Saturday. The Israeli military says it hit Hezbollah missile units at command centers in the Baalbek area.
Thousands of nurses at a major New York hospital system have approved a new contract, voting to end a strike after more than a month. The nurses' union announced the vote results Saturday. More than 4,000 nurses in the privately run New York Presbyterian system have been on strike since January 12th. They are now due to start returning to work in the coming week. The union, called the New York State Nurses Association, and the hospital said they reached a tentative deal. Breaking news, townhall.com. It's all English all the time for professional drivers.
All truckers and bus drivers will have to take their commercial driver's license tests in English as the Trump administration expands its aggressive campaign to improve safety in the industry and get unqualified drivers off the road. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy announced the latest effort Friday to ensure that drivers understand English well enough to read road signs and communicate with law enforcement officers. Keith Peters, Washington.
Willie Colon, a key creator of Urban Salsa, has died. He was 75. His family and manager confirmed his death in social media posts Saturday. Colon was a trombonist, composer, arranger, and singer. He recorded more than 40 albums that have sold tens of millions worldwide. More on these stories at townhall.com.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
You're listening to an encore presentation of We the People on KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
For advertisement of the day?
Yeah.
What are we into?
I don't know. What are you into?
Four Winds Jewelers. They've been great. And I saw Carl Bott from the station in there. Apparently they've been advertisers since the station opened. Huh, who knew? And I love them. They fix all my watches. If you have any old watches, especially mechanical, wind watches, Jim over there does all the fixing. And if you need your rings tipped or sized or any of that stuff, they do all the work in-house, and they do an excellent job, and the pricing is terrific. So that's Four Winds Jewelers on Hilltop Drive. Can't miss them. And so let's see. Let's do some tiny bit of housekeeping. The archives. The archives, moved them, actually, because we had too many years. Goes back 15 years. So I scooted them all over to make room for the incoming 2026. And just so you know, they are free to access, free to listen to. They're just MP3 files. We hope you make use of them. I don't have everything grouped by category, but categories where I had enough shows to put them all on one page. Wolves, pot, transgender stuff, Klamath, China, environmentalism. God knows there's plenty there. Shows with veteran focus, South Africa. I've got a ton of shows on South Africa. Islam, and then all the government and national security. I'll probably add this one. I don't know if I should add it to Enviro Craziness or government and national security. I think I'll add it to both
yeah,
pages.
Yeah, you should.
So today we're, it's funny. I've run into a couple people who have heard of this issue, but mind-blowingly, probably 95% of the public is completely unaware.
Anybody that's heard about
that there is a looming gas crisis in California. So today we have with us in studio Mike Ariza, and then on a conference call we have Professor Michael Miché and Assemblyman Stan Ellis. So I have listed all of their bios and all of those things. Today is December 28th, 2025. And we hope you had a Merry Christmas, by the way. And unfortunately, we're going to ruin your new year before it even starts.
We're going to give you something to look forward to.
Oops. Yeah, sorry about that. Should have done something cheerful. So Mike was born in Fairfield, beautiful downtown metropolitan Fairfield, I'm sure, at that time. Raised in Vacaville, went to Vacaville High School. He was in the Navy, so shout out to you on the Navy service. Thank you for that. And you worked, I'm just going to summarize, you were at Chevron Oil Refinery. You were at Exxon Valero at the Benicia Refinery for a long time, and Flying J Refinery in Bakersfield. And now you're at California State Chico.
CSU Chico.
Professor Miché is the Associate Professor of Practice of Management and Organization. He's widely sought for his independent and objective perspective, exceptional consulting acumen. That's what we're tapping into today, his consulting acumen, boardroom skills, and direct Socratic data-driven client-centric style. Sure, say that really fast. Of addressing highly complex and critical strategic organizational, operational, and positioning issues, which obviously this is all of those things. He's been a member of the USC faculty since 1997, and he coordinates the USC's Marshall Management Consulting undergraduate and graduate curricula programs. I have his CV on there as a PDF if you would like to peruse. It's really pretty interesting. And then Assemblyman Stan Ellis, he is a farmer, local businessman, and community member with deep roots in the Central Valley. Grew up on a hog farm in South Dakota. and work to put himself through college at South Dakota of Mine, at the South Dakota School of Mines and Technology. And he graduated with a degree in mathematics, settled in Kern County, and has an extensive entrepreneurial career where he wandered into politics somehow.
Oops.
Discovered the joys of the California legislature. We'll leave that for another show. Yes, haven't we all blundered into that? Not as deeply as poor Stan. So now that I've kind of laid out the cast of characters, I guess we should identify our voices, huh? So tell us something. Mike, where would you like to start? We'll go through where everybody wants to make sure we don't miss something.
Well, where to start? This has been going on for a while. I took interest in it when I heard that Valero was shutting down. So I'm farmed myself and work at the university. It didn't really catch my attention until I heard Valero was shutting down. Valero is the most efficient refinery in the state.
And they supply a lot of California's supply.
Yeah, 10 to 11% of the gasoline, and they make another 12 to 14,000 barrels a day of jet fuel and diesel. And when they go down, we're going to lose about 10% of our supply. We're already right now with Phillips 66 is down, Marathon, Refinery Martinez. They're on 17,000 barrels a day of renewable diesel, but the 170,000 barrels a day of crude oil they used to bring in is shut down. So all the gasoline, all the jet fuel, the propane they make, it's gone. Rodeo Refinery converted over to renewable diesel. They're at rates of around 45,000 barrels a day of renewable diesel, but they also their gasoline, the jet fuel, everything they made, that's all gone. So with those two refineries down, we've lost 18 to 20% of the 38 million gallons a day that California still consumes of gasoline. And then Phillips 66 shut down on October 17th. They're in the final stages of that, so that's another 8 to 9%. And then Valero, originally they were going to shut down in April, but they're going to go ahead and apparently shut down in January as they canceled their crude oil contracts over 2 months ago.
Oh, wow.
So the state tried to get them to stay open, and they basically told the state, no, thank you, we're out of here. Valero makes about 10 to 11% of the gasoline that's coming into the state. So the total, with Valero going down, basically 40% of our gasoline jet and a huge percentage of our jet fuel and diesel is going to be coming from Singapore, South Korea, and from India.
And we can't import that because California has their own blend. Is that right?
Hold on, boys. We're jumping ahead.
Oh.
We need to identify the voices of everyone so that we can actually have a conversation and people will know who they are, because we don't know what they sound like either. But now that we've laid out some ugly math, let's bring in Professor Miche, who has 43 years of global management consulting experience, and in 43 years, I'm sure he's going to give this all an F. If we stick with the school theme, I think probably Gavin Newsom gets an F, yes?
Well, Gavin's grades aren't very good. This is Professor Miche, and thank you so much for having me on. It's a real pleasure to be with you today. It's a great way to start, right? I've been following this industry since 1973 when I was an undergraduate. So I got into energy economics during the energy crisis of 73 with the Arab nations' embargo of U.S. oil supplies to the United States, and just began studying it. I mean, it was just a great industry to study. And then, of course, I started my career on Wall Street and then went to KPMG, became a partner, and then ultimately ended up at USC when I retired from the partnership. So it's been a lifelong study of mine. I love the industry. I love the economics of the industry. It's really fascinating to me. And I think if there will be a textbook written on this, and it'll be called All the Wrong Moves made by California and the legislature, and in particular our current governor. You know, when you look at some of the statistics, and we'll get into those when you're ready, they're pretty dismal, and they could have been entirely avoided, okay? But nonetheless, we are where we're at, and I'll let my good friend Assemblyman Ellis take over from here.
Yeah, we mentioned the California legislature. Cue Stan Ellis. So, Assemblyman Ellis, how much fun are you having? Uh-oh, he's in the cone of silence.
I don't know that he's on the phone.
Oh.
You might want to... He's having so much fun. He's not on the phone.
We said California legislature, and he's like, "Oh, this must not be for me. I better get out of here." Oh my God!
Called the wrong number.
Yeah,
I'm sure we'll get him.
Yeah, Mike's gonna text him. So tell me this: when you say that this is totally preventable, and you've been looking at it since I was 12. Have we teetered this close?
Making me feel bad.
Yeah, but at least I was born. At least I was born then. You know, it's when they say, you know, 30 years ago, and they look at you with that deer in the headlights. You're like, oh my God, you're right. I was born way before that. So when you say it was avoidable recently or avoidable a long time ago? Like how long have we been marching toward the cliff?
Been marching toward the cliff for quite a while when you began to see these refineries, and we had over 40 of them at one time, right? Began to decline, and then somewhere around 2005 is when we shifted from being more in-state production to being more reliant on imports. So we were fairly consistent in our production, in our dependency on in-state production all the way up until about 2005-ish or so, and then it switched, and we began more dependency on imports, particularly from Saudi Arabia at that time, and which was our number one producer and our number one supplier of oil for a long, long time. And so we saw ourselves becoming more dependent on the imports from these foreign nations. At the same time, the population was increasing, the number of motor vehicles was increasing, and the number of refineries were decreasing. So, it became somewhat of alarming to us as 15, 20 years ago. But it really began sort of crystallizing in 2015 and then again in 2019, which are pretty significant years when you look at the history of oil and gasoline in our state. And so in 2019... I think a few of the alarms went off, but the legislature and the governor dismissed them. And then I know in 2022, some more alarms went off among the producers. They actually contacted the government and said, look, you know, this could be a very difficult situation moving forward. And in 2023, I personally informed the state legislature via a Senate hearing that we needed more production. So a lot of this was avoidable, and then we started seeing more and more harsh regulations being superimposed on the industry. So, things like that were happening.
So you're saying that the Saudi Arabia imports, that was just crude, or was that refined fuels?
Okay, it was crude.
Okay.
We didn't really start importing a lot of refined fuels until, say, the last 10 years, the increases of refined product has started to increase. And now, for 2025, they're at an all-time 20-year high. We've imported more gasoline from foreign sources in 2025 than we've had since, I think, 2004. So, and there's no abatement of that on the horizon. So we can, the only plan that the CEC has come forward with is importing more gasoline. That's it. They have nothing else to offer, and they haven't offered anything else to the people of California. And so they said, all right, we're going to increase more. Imports will increase. Yeah, port congestion will increase. Yeah, emissions will increase, and the price will increase. That's all we have to offer.
But what could go wrong?
What could go wrong?
Right. What could go wrong
when we have 3 to 5 times more tankers on the Pacific Ocean coming to California in 2026 than you've had in 2024? Yeah. What could go wrong? So, you know, these are some of the issues we're going to look at, and we'll be happy to discuss these as we move forward.
Okay. And I heard a ding and a little bit of static. Sounds a wee bit like wind. So maybe Stan has blown in to join us.
Hi, everyone. This is Stan Ellis. How are you guys?
Hi, Stan. We joked about the California legislature trying to introduce you, and you weren't there. We're like, oh, no, they got him.
They got the stand.
we said California legislature, and then the sucking sound began.
Sounds like the assembly, frankly.
Yeah.
But anyway, thanks for having me on the show, you guys.
Yes.
I'm traveling, so if I happen to lose you, I'll call back in.
No sweat. The beauty of conference call lines, right? They're always there for you.
Yes, ma'am.
So, my name is Aaron. So just so you have some voices to go with.
Yeah.
Bill, say something.
Hi, Aaron.
Oh, Stan. Glad you made it.
So you've been watching this for how long?
Well, Michael Mish, Dr. Mish, and myself had met on a show, and he was so knowledgeable and he's been watching it for a lot longer than I have. And then this is about probably six months ago. And then we developed a relationship. And then Mike Ariza came to my office when I was in the state legislature and had done a really good job of summarizing the refinery end of it. I broke out in the oil field in 1975, so I had 50 years of experience in drilling production upstream and downstream. So the three of us had made a pretty good combination, and we came up with this. Looking at where we're going with our oil and gas production and our refining capacity, it was pretty simple to see that it is a risk to national security, and we really got worried. So we wrote a paper, and the professor did an incredible job, and so then here we are. 6 months later, trying to get the word out, and look, it's really a matter of national security, and I'm really worried. When you have Valero shutting down, and it Travis Air Force Base gets 100% of its fuel, a jet fuel from Valero, where's that going to come from? And then all of a sudden, you look at the 40-some bases we have in California, which includes obviously. Air Force and China Lake and the other arms of the military, we have 40-some bases. And then we have Nevada, and part we're supplying. So what are we going to do? And then all of a sudden, and of course Russia knows this and China knows this. When they want to put a hurt on this, they drop a couple of those ships out, and guess what? We're in a gas crisis.
Yeah.
Not just for the public, but for the military. And that's my concern.
We have to take a really quick break, but when we come back, let's start with Stan, because I'd like to hear we'll give you 2 minutes to maybe switch to decaf, because I'd like to know what the other folks in the legislature are saying when you're bringing this.
It's a crisis.
When you're bringing this up, because I think I already know the answer, but we'll all switch to decaf.
We're
going to take a really quick break. We have Mike Ariza here, who has been in the refinery business for a long time. We have Professor Michael Miche from USC, and we have Assemblyman Stan Ellis with us from the California Legislature. So that's our cast of characters today, and we're talking about the looming crisis in California with our refinery shutting down, which should alarm everyone, even if you don't live here. So we're going to come right back. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I'm going to do bad things, do it like it's nothing. Being bad has never felt so good. I'm going to do bad things, you won't see. Doing bad things to you.
Adidas cabinets. The local pros. windows.
Mandina's Cabinets in Anderson designs custom kitchens, bathrooms, and offices that no big box store can match. They are the local pros who know.
Mandina's Cabinets. The local pros who know. Mandina's Cabinets. The local pros.
530-365-8108 or visit mandinascabinets.com.
Charlu's Tap House in Anderson, where tradition, taste, and togetherness come to life. Warm up with our made-from-scratch soups and signature family sauces, crafted from cherished recipes passed down through generations. Watch the magic happen when we hand-toss every pizza to order, then bake it to perfection. Crispy, cheesy, and made with love. Let the little ones explore our brand-new adventure room with bounce houses, arcade games, and even a make-your-own pizza table where the kids can make their own pizza. Charlu's Tap House in Anderson, where tradition, taste, and togetherness come to life.
Since 1934, Grange Co-op has stood for more than just a store. It's all about neighbors helping neighbors, families growing together, and communities thriving. And now, that tradition is here in Reading. From feed and garden supplies to tools and pet essentials, Grange Co-op has what you need. With service you can trust. Visit us today at 55 Lake Boulevard. Grange Co-op, trusted by neighbors since 1934.
Flames, you're about to give it, I'm about to take it. Yeah, we're going down in flames. What can we do when we're only human? Everybody makes mistakes. There's more than enough to go around. Flames, who said it first? Who did it hurt? What the hell doesn't change? Why go there when I don't care? If you want to walk away, you just take your things. I'll take the blame.
It's about the best setup I got for you, Stan.
Yes.
Blame. So, what's the response of your colleagues in the legislature when you bring up this topic?
Well, so there are 20 Republicans and 60 Democrats, and unfortunately, the Democrats, when I bring it up offline, they agree, but I'm on the Natural Resources Committee, and there are bills that try to come forth that want to penalize oil companies for emissions, and we put out the clean.
Uh-oh. The cone of silence is captured.
You broke up there,
Stan. Go ahead and repeat what you were saying.
Yeah. So anyway, we put out the cleanest oil and gas in the world. And what's happening is that the green agenda and greenhouse gases emissions that the Democrats have put forth have made it appear that oil and gas is dirty. However, if that's the case, then why do we make 6,000 products from oil and gas and oil and gas derivatives? So the green agenda has ruined the oil and gas industry in California. And I'm the first one to say that we're going to run out of oil and gas for some future generation. Why wouldn't we, instead of spending $1 billion on high-speed rail, put it into fusion and put it into other alternative, wind and solar, a little piece, but fusion and fission and micronuclear are the real answers long-term. Mm-hmm. But until we get there, we need oil and gas. And so there's just no common sense. There's not a common sense transition. And to answer your question, the legislators, the Democratic legislators really don't get it, and they don't care to get it because they fall under Newsom's agenda, and his agenda is greenhouse gas, unfortunately.
Okay. So swing over to Professor Miché. So you've been watching this since 1974. So the fact that they're not getting it doesn't mean the results aren't going to happen.
Well,
to the state.
Yes. I mean, so let's look at some data, okay? Just make it as simple as we can. So at one time, California was the world's leading producer and exporter of petroleum. Wow. We were number one in the world. Now, that was a long time ago, right? Even before I started following this industry. And we have the fifth largest oil reserves in the United States. So the petroleum industry, if you really sort of think about California, you have, you know, the gold rush, and then the next rush was the black gold rush, which was the oil rush, which began in around 1869 and went all the way into, you know, the 20th century. So, you know, petroleum played a huge part in the economic development of California. Now, the petroleum industry itself represents about 8% of the California GDP, but it's the first 8%. As Stan mentioned, you have petroleum in 6,000 products. If you have an EV, which is great, you're driving down the road on asphalt that's made from petroleum. By the way, your tires are made from petroleum, and your EV has about 4 or 5 quarts of oil in it to lubricate the parts that are moving. So, you know, it's one of these products that is essential to any modern economy. So we had this very significant and dominant position for years and years and years. And at one time, we had 40 refineries in the state, and now we're going to be down to 7. And probably by the end of 2027, probably down to 6. So we're looking at a decline. And some of the statistics that Mike Ariza mentioned, to put it more in sort of consumer terms, we're losing somewhere between 6.2 and 9 million gallons of gasoline a day in in-state production. That's how much our production is falling by a day. And so the question is, where is the state going to make that up? And the only answer that they have is, well, through imports. Great. They'll tell you that, but they won't tell you what the price effect of that will be. So in all instances, we're looking at price increases and the potential of supply shortages because, as Stan mentioned, you know, you're going to have 3 to 5 times more tankers coming across the Pacific Ocean. Anything can happen. A typhoon, labor disputes, geopolitical events. Anything.
Mm-hmm. Shuts off the supply.
To disrupt that supply.
Yeah.
And by the way, we run on about a 14-day supply in the state. That's what we run on. Now, the statistics will tell you that
say
around
that again? We have about 14 days
Supply, okay, in the state.
Oh, that's terrific.
At any one, yeah, that's 14 days. That's it, though.
Yeah.
That's all you got. Okay. Now, what happens is when it hits around 12 to 13 days, it's almost like a hockey stick in terms of the bend in the curve. It literally goes like 80 degrees straight up in price. So at around 12 to 13 days supply, that price is going to increase by at least $1 to $1.50 a gallon. So that's how tight supply is, and that's how fragile this inbound supply system will be. And that has implications for the California consumer, and it has broader implications for the following. A, Arizona. They get about 48% of their gas comes from California, slightly less now.
Wow.
Nevada, totally messed up. Over 80% of their fuel comes from California.
Oh, shoot.
And as Stan and Mike and I, we tried to bring out in our study, you know, not only are they affected, this California contagion effect will propagate on out into national security. And so, you know, we have a significant vulnerability that's being created by the loss of these refineries, and I might add the loss of the North-South pipeline, which is generally called the Crimson Pipeline, which is collapsing as we speak. So these are some of these profound implications of these policies. And what we tried to do in our study is just simply bring them forward factually. You know, there's no real political agenda other than here's the numbers. and the numbers really aren't looking very good, and the numbers don't lie.
Now, you said there was roughly, what, six or seven refineries left in California. With the rest of these going out, are those refineries able to increase capacity, or are they kind of maxed out?
Well, Mike, I'll give the first answer, and Mike will give you the micro answer to that. I'll backfill it. They're pretty much maxed out. You can't run a refinery at 100% capacity. We all know that. The physics do not allow that. So when a refinery is running, say, between 88, 87, say, to 92, that's a really good sweet spot for the utilization. They don't really have a lot of upside on that because of the physics involved and safety and just the chemical processes involved in that refinery. So we're tapped out. Now, we can change the mix. It's what do you want? If you want more gasoline, then I'm going to produce less jet fuel and less diesel fuel. If I want more jet fuel, then I have to produce less diesel fuel and less gasoline. So the refiners, as a result of the policies, are really boxed into a corner. And so, like any refiner, they try to optimize their product mix. It comes out what we call the barrel, the products that come out of the barrel. Okay, that slate, they try to optimize that, given the quality of crude that they have in the equipment they're running. And so I'll let Mike Azia walk you through the details of that.
You have, I don't know if you have the numbers, but when speaking about the military, what percentage, what usage do they demand of the total output of what we're refining right now? How much of that has to go to the military? I mean, they use jet fuel, they use diesel, they use gas.
And this is in peacetime.
Yeah, exactly. So what are they using now, I mean, as far as a percentage of output?
I would have to look that up. I think that's in our study, and I think it's around 8 to 12% of the output.
Part of the problem, I'll interrupt here for a second. Part of the problem is it's classified, so we don't know what their usage is, but we can only guess.
Oh,
that makes sense.
Yeah, it's about 8 to 12%. What we know about, for example, we know that Travis burns through about 200,000 gallons of jet fuel a day, just on normal operations. That's just nothing happening in the world, nothing extraordinary going on, nothing extraordinarily planned in terms of training or any types of exercises. So they go through about 200,000 gallons.
And that's one base out of 40?
That's one base out of 40. Depending on how you count them, you get up into the 50s.
Yeah.
You know, you have small bases, you have big bases, you have, you know, all sorts of little things. And then you have, let's not forget, that's just California. You have significant assets, military assets, based in Nevada and in Arizona. Significant Air Force assets based in both of those states. And in the case of Nevada, pretty much all of it is coming from California. So this entire state is pretty much dependent on whatever happens in California. And whatever price increases are in California, there's like a 97% correlation that the price will increase in Nevada. So we have a profound effect on the neighboring states and on national security.
God. Mike's got his calculator open. What's your calculator open for, Mike? What are you doing over here?
Oh, I know how much barrels jet fuel Valero produces a day, but I forgot how many gallons that is. So let's multiply that. Back to the professor's point, you know, Travis, if something happens in Taiwan or some other significant theater opens up, you're looking at, a KC-10 extender and a C-5 take roughly 100,000 gallons of fuel. Valero makes about 600,000 gallons of fuel a day.
Oh, boy.
But that's just one sortie between a fuel extender, 100,000 gallons right there. As far as, Arizona, Phoenix is totally dependent on us. And when you look at the percentages in Nevada, well, you're looking at 80, 88% different numbers. The bottom line is Reno and Vegas are totally dependent on us. So the three major cities, they're dependent on us. So we start running into shortages, which we will do. They're in trouble, prices, supplies. With regard to the refineries, Valero actually produces more gasoline per barrel of oil than any of the other refineries in the state. It was designed different. It was built differently. So you're going to lose a lot with Valero. Phillips 66 is already down in Wilmington. That takes us down to eight refineries that are actually up of any size or capacity that are running. Valero goes down. Originally, they were slated to go down in April. Looks like they're going down next month. You're going to lose, like Professor said, the whole supply of jet fuel comes from Valero. And then a bunch of real-world events that have occurred in the last 2 to 3 months since we started embarking on this, me and the assemblyman and professor. You've had a major fire at the Chevron refinery in El Segundo. You had a fuels oil tanker bound for Singapore hijacked in the Indian Ocean. You had a leak on the Olympic gasoline pipeline in Washington, shutting that down for a little while. So the other thing is storms. When I ran the Valero refinery, there were three separate times where I actually cut back Valero's crude oil rate because storms in Alaska were holding up the Alaska North Slope tankers from getting to us. A couple of times we cut from 135,000 barrels down to 100. One time we were about 6 hours away from totally shutting down because the storms were really severe and we were not getting enough. We can't run on 24,000 barrels a day of crude, San Joaquin Valley crude by itself.
Right.
You have to have supplements. When my wife went to visit her family, Hong Kong, Guangzhou, those big cities in China, typhoon went through, shut down the shipping for 2 or 3 days. So any of these real-world events just leaves us extremely vulnerable, leaves the military vulnerable, and like Stan was pointing out, it puts the whole country at risk. If the West Coast is taken out, if our Air Force and Navy can't get airborne, it's all up and down. We know how long the state of California is down the coast. Then you're affecting Arizona, you're affecting Nevada. We're in serious trouble. And that was initially why we got together on this, was take away the risk to our civilian population, because there will be major civil unrest. We saw how everybody reacted to toilet paper shortages.
Yeah.
When they get on their little app, Gas Buddy or whatever, and say, okay, there's gasoline over here. They go over there. There's
and
no gasoline.
There.
And they're going to go crazy. And, all of our metropolitan areas, L.A., San Francisco, Sacramento, Phoenix, people are going to totally go crazy. And the military is going to suffer. The military is, it's been a risk since like 2 or 3 years ago when they shut down Marathon and put Rodeo in, the ConocoPhillips Rodeo refinery, put it on clean fuels, the diesel. That gasoline, that jet fuel, all that production took about 20% out right then, 2 or 3 years ago. Phillips 66 in Wilmington took out another roughly 9 to 10%, and Valero's another 10 to 12%. So when Valero finally pulls the plug, between 40 and 43% of our gasoline is going to be imported across the ocean. And with all those things I mentioned, real world events that have occurred, I forgot about the fire on the cargo ship in Los Angeles. It was so severe they had to pull it away from the port. You damage the port of Los Angeles, we can't get the tankers in.
Can't get them in.
Well, crippling us will be child's play.
And like the professor says, you're down to 12-day supply. Price jumps up $1.50 a gallon.
We'll be lucky if that's all there is.
Those numbers better. Well, we get down to 8 days, 7 days. That's where all three of us just totally concur. $8 a gallon is minimum.
Yeah.
The minimum what it's going to be within a few months.
And on that cheerful note, I have to be the fun killer and tell us that we have to take a break.
Yeah, I want to talk about location of these refineries, too, and how it affects regionally the supply and demand.
Sure.
When we return.
Sure.
And just so you have something to stew on during the commercial break, the terrific job that we're doing of making our own special fuel in California to make our own special air that is only over our own special heads is a 1% improvement. All this, we have hamstrung ourselves and walled ourselves off from the world for a 1% cleaner fuel. God, I can totally tell. Break time. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Open now at Turtle Bay Museum, Thomas D. Mangelson, A Life in the Wild, featuring 40 of the legendary wildlife photographer's most powerful images captured in the wild. These iconic once-in-a-lifetime moments include polar bears dancing on Arctic ice, a salmon leaping straight into the jaws of a massive brown bear, landscapes from all seven continents, and much more. The A Life in the Wild tour is produced by David J. Wagner, LLC, and is on display at Turtle Bay Museum now through May 3rd. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Hi, I'm Dr. Maria Salas, owner of HealthWise Chiropractic. My focus is to help people feel better, look better, and take control of their health with a simple, life-changing plan. It starts with smarter eating choices and adding the right amount of protein to support gut health and reduce inflammation. You'll also receive weekly accountability coaching, a free guide, and a complimentary consultation with me, Dr. Maria Salas. Ready to feel your best? Call or text 530-227-3984.
Looking for a great way to spend your Sunday? Come down to Wind River Resort and Casino and indulge in our Sunday brunch. Available from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. End your weekend with us and get this all-you-can-eat brunch for $45 with a River Club card or $55 without. Kids under 10 for just $15. Gather your friends and family and enjoy our wide variety of specialty entrees, perfect for a relaxing Sunday morning or afternoon. For menu or complete details, visit WindRiver.com or call 1-800-280-YOU-WIN. Find your moment at Wind River Resort and Casino.
Hi friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor, Oliva Melano Maduro. From the verdant fields of Jalapa, Nicaragua, comes an epic 95-rated cigar, wrapped in a Maduro leaf from San Andres. Expect notes of espresso, anise, and walnut liqueur. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Transmissions of will resume. I try to push, try to keep us all down, down, and hope that we will never see the truth around. Another promise, another scene, another a package like to keep us trapped in greed. All a green belts wrapped around our minds, an endless red tape to keep the truth confined.
Yeah, the green belt wrapped around our minds and the regulation.
Yep, yep. So Mike, with these refineries, I would imagine the Valero supplies the gas for Northern California, or does it really matter where they are, or are they very regional where their supply goes?
Typically, it's regional. With the El Segundo fire, I know a tanker was rerouted from the Gulf Coast away from the East Coast to Southern California, and some jet fuel was routed to Southern California from here. Once Valero goes down, that flexibility is gone. You'll only have Chevron and the PBF refinery Martinez.
So that's where you get into shortages.
Exactly.
There just isn't any.
It's just not there. It's not available.
Right. Wow. Yeah, there's going to be some unrest when that happens. I mean, people depend on their vehicles every day. You expect to go out, turn the key, and go. But if you can't get fuel, you can't go to work, you can't buy groceries.
Well, all the manufacturing and everything. So let's swerve over into the Assemblyman Ellis lane here. Stan, any recognition of this by the California legislature, the people that are say, watching the regulators that are squeezing our lives into...
No. What's happening is they're so driven by this green agenda that they will not... All they want is tighter regulations. The Democrats put forth Bill 237, which allowed about 2,000 drilling permits in Kern County and exempted them from CEQA to get to work right away. But 2,000 wells over the next 10 years is a drop in the bucket, 40, 50,000 barrels. But Aaron, I want to go back to your reformulated fuel comment that you made earlier.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we're getting, so years ago we spent billions of dollars getting our refineries from low sulfur spec and reformulated fuels, and they call it CARBOB here. And now we're getting so-called CARBOB from India, and I think, and we don't have regulatory agencies over there watching how clean they put out their, how clean their emissions are. And then all of a sudden, we're putting this fuel and crude into ships that burn number six fuel oil. And number six fuel oil is loaded with polynuclear aromatic hydrocarbons like phenanthracene, cryosine, benzopyrene. And what happens is they put these out in the atmosphere, and 20 miles out when they get out from the port, they kick over to low sulfur diesel. It's hypocrisy at its best.
Boy,
so
no
so you think you think we might get 1% better air? No, we're getting worse air. So I'm sorry, I had to go back to that, Aaron.
No, that's okay, because it makes no sense. The air above us doesn't. I mean, even children. You know, you don't even have to have this in school. Because everyone knows
right.
The air moves around, so the air over California isn't the air over California for very long. So
the jet stream comes right across us.
Yeah, so
the
jet stream comes
right across us from the Pacific.
I guarantee you the air that was blowing me off the trail with the dog right before the radio station is in Ohio now. I mean, it's just... Mike's not going to use any fuel going home at all. It's just going to blow him right back to Chico.
But back to your question about nothing's happening. I can put forth any type of legislation I want, but unless I'm a Democrat, it's not going to go anywhere.
God.
This is Professor Michelle.
Yeah,
I can add to that.
Please.
So in hearings back in June, the then chairwoman of CARB, California Air Resource Board, was asked directly, does CARB measure the effect of greenhouse gas emissions for the sources of oil, foreign sources of oil, at the wellhead? And did they measure the greenhouse gas emissions for all the tankers coming across the Pacific? And the answer was, no, we don't do that. So if you think about it, you're adding a significant amount of greenhouse gas emissions due to the 3 to 5 time increase in the number of tankers coming across the Pacific. I mean, it just doesn't seem to make sense to any of us that look at the math and understand the numbers. So the logic is really perverted. Let's not produce oil here and let's shut down the refineries, but let's import it from places like Brazil. Well, I'll give you an example for Brazil, right, because it has to do with the AB 30 legislation for ethanol. So Brazil produces ethanol from sugarcane. Collectively, the estimates are that Brazil has burned 24 million acres of rainforest and jungles for agricultural production, a significant amount of which is sugarcane for ethanol, which... guess who imports that ethanol? California. So not only are we importing oil from Brazil, and their oil, by the way, is all deep water offshore oil, same way with oil off Santa Barbara coast, in federal waters is all deep shore off. But nonetheless, you know, there's a bit of a hypocrisy among the policymakers and the regulators. Well, you know, we won't do with the full life cycle calculation of emissions. And that's an important factor for us, and we are working on that right now.
To get that information to them, to make, I mean, I don't want to speed to the conclusion here, but, like, what do you think will tip the scale for people who have their hand on the lever? Like, is there anything you can see?
No, I think Stan summarized it nicely. You know, he's a Republican, and there's a limited number of Republicans, in a supermajority of Democrats. And as in Stan's case, in private, I've had Democrats come up to me and say, you know, Professor Mache, we really appreciate your work. We understand your numbers. They are alarming, but we can't really do much about it. And that's all they'll say. The best thing we can do is bring these issues, which we try to do in our study, Stan, Mike, and I, try to do in our study, bring these issues to the public, bring them to people like you who can get the message out in the public, and then get them to Washington, D.C., to policymakers at the federal level. With the amount of reductions we're looking at in gasoline, the vulnerability of the supply chain that's being created, the number of emissions that are going to result from massive amounts of oil tankers coming across the Pacific. I mean, they'll be parked outside of the waters trying to get in to unload, and heck, you can probably step across them to get to Hawaii. So that's a national issue. And so bringing it to the attention of national policymakers, such as the president, I think is in the best interest of not only California, but also the nation. So we're hopeful that President Trump and his administration takes a serious look at the work that's being done out here.
And that's the biggest part of the problem that we've been working on. With Phillips 66 going down, Valero, we're down. We're at 40-plus percent, 30, 35% of our jet fuel. That's where the vulnerability lies. And these refineries, you can't just start them back up. Valero is extremely complex.
If they shut one down, I mean, you can't just turn the key and turn it back on.
It could take weeks to months to start one back up. And a big problem is qualified personnel. You know, when I worked at Flying J, this is the part that's kind of ironic, was the Democrats back then, Barbara Boxer and Lockyer, they saw the logic in a 3 to 4% loss of gasoline production in California, which Flying J represented. They told Shell, we can't have that. The supplies could have a problem. The prices, you know, the price spikes in California are already paid too much. They figured it out at that time.
That's sad. Some of the most literal, the smart one.
Well, that's the thing. And they basically forced Shell to sell the refinery to Flying J. But back to my point was a lot of the Shell employees had already set to transfer. A couple came up to Martinez back then, you know, transfer to Texas. Some just retired. And you lose that. You know, the longer it sits, the more you're retired. Once you've got it down and everything's cleared and you don't need operators, you know, they lay them off. They retire, transfer to other facilities. The dynamic with Valero that no one knows or understands is the fact that Valero, with its complexity of within the control room, you have one control room running eight major units. In another refinery, you have one control room and operators running one unit. So Valero, you know, you can get somebody to come help you that's got 30 or 40 years experience, but typically they'll have experience on the CAT unit or the crude unit or the sulfur unit.
Like that's the, like a
siloed. Right, like islands within the refinery.
Yeah.
At Valero, you're starting them all up at the same time. And that's where Valero is very problematic, because once enough qualified people have left Valero, you're going to find, I mean, me, it's been a while, I could probably do it, but, you know, you try to find other qualified people in the whole country.
Who can run all those different
at the
facets
same time.
All at the same time.
At the same time.
And how many personnel does it take to run a Valero?
Well, they have they have 400. I mean, you get down a skeleton crew, probably, you know, 150. You have teams running through. Valero is unique because you did maintenance and you did operations. You did both because
right.
It was non-union. But the thing about the qualifications of running it is you got to have time.
Mm-hmm.
I learned how to run it from very qualified ladies and gentlemen that knew the CAT unit, knew the coker, but they, you know, they worked that and ran all of them at the same time. So, you know, it took four or five years before I was extremely proficient at it. So in another refinery, it takes you a year or two before you can go in a control room, you know, and start running one of their units. So
right.
This isn't something where you jump in, you learn how to run the drive-through, and you go.
Well,
this is
plus
very complex.
You blow up the industry, and, you know, people aren't going to necessarily want to flock back to California so they can get So they can get...
When they're gone, they're gone.
Yeah, ruined again.
And the thing
like
is...
Like our sawmills. I mean, mm-hmm. Look at how many industries mm-hmm. we have... where we have done this.
Budweiser,
and now people are like,
Budweiser in Sonoma County is going down.
I forgot about that. There's that.
That's two big employers in Sonoma County, just Sonoma County alone. And then going back to your question about refineries and capacity, I was told a long time ago, and this is absolutely true, what a refinery does, they come back online from a shutdown, they put it up to 6,000 RPM, and they cut it back, throw back 500 RPM, and you hold that for 3 years. That's their maxed out. They are permitted. There's permitted levels. Valero's originally was 135 when I was there. I think it's 145 now, 145,000 barrels a day. They can't.
Dang, we're out of time. Sorry. We have to go, to commercial. I'm all captivated.
And we're out.
Okay, bye.
Fruitcake with no nuts, so good you could go nuts.
You're going to have all those things when you get home.
No, now! I want a ball! I want a party. Pink macaroons and a million balloons and performing baboons and give it to me. Now! I want the world.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.